Well, welcome to another Dave D. CD of the Month, and I am very honored today on the phone with me. I have a true legend in the direct marketing business, and I don't say that lightly. There's a lot of guys out there who claim to be legends and really aren't. We have on the call with us Mr. Jim Straw, and this guy has done and knows more about direct marketing than almost all of the newfangled gurus combined. And so I'm very, very excited about having him on the call. How are you doing today, Mr. Straw?
It's just Jim. Mr. Straw was my daddy.
Okay, that sounds great. That sounds great. Well, I just want to get right. I've got so many questions for you, and I've been really promoting this interview on my Inner Circle site, and into my members are very excited about it. So let's get started. How did you get started? And, you know, the first that I know about you is something you did something as a career as a finder. Is that how you got started? Is that?
Well, actually, I started out when I was about 9 years old, selling grit newspaper and cloverleaf salve, carried the early morning newspaper route and all of that. Long time ago in school, they used to have lyceums where the students would pay a dime or whatever, and they'd get to listen to a speaker. One of the speakers was a Catholic priest, and the Catholic priest told us all about their vows of poverty and all of that. I must have looked puzzled when I got home because Dad asked me what was wrong with me. I told him about the priest telling us all, by the way, there was only one or two Catholic families in the town. So it was something new for all of us. And I told Dad about the Catholic priest and the vows of poverty. And Dad looked at me and he says, "Well, son, that's fine and dandy." He said, "But a poor man can't even help himself, where a rich man can help anybody he wants to, anytime he wants to." So I decided right then to get rich.
That's great.
I started carrying newspapers. I sold Christmas cards at Christmas time, you name it. Anything that was in the back of the comic books that I could sell, if I didn't have to put up any money, I would sell it.
You know, it's funny. It seems like almost all successful entrepreneurs or at some point in their career have done some kind of direct selling like that, be it vacuum cleaners or door-to-door sales. Have you found that to be true?
Oh, yes. I've sold sewing machines and you name it. I've sold just about everything. But I got started in finder's fees, actually, with the farmers. I also worked farm crews. I was 13 years old, and I hired boys 16 to 18 years old to do hay hauling and things like that, and I'd job them out to the farmers in the area. Well, I knew every farmer in the county, and when one farmer had a tractor for sale and another farmer needed a tractor, I arranged to get a little commission on it. I didn't know I was earning finder's fees, but I soon found out, well, when I was in the Army, I read an old book, Unusual Business Opportunities, that told about finder's fees. And I didn't know you could earn them on heavy equipment and closeouts and anything else. So, but it's the same thing I had been doing with the farmers.
Now, as I understand it, the book, because I've read a lot of your materials, and I have a lot of your materials.
Thank you.
The book that you found really didn't give the real scoop, though, correct, on how
no,
to do it?
No, but it's like I've always said, it doesn't make a difference whether the information you read is totally viable or not. If it inspires you to do it, then I always credited that old book for having founded my fortune in finder's fees. Until I started to write the book about how to get paid finder's fees, and I went back and reviewed it, and it was just about as bad as everything else on the market.
Let me ask you about that, because we've been talking about that, and I know in your Dynamite newsletter that you sent out, your email newsletter. And could you give everyone the address for that right now? I just want to make sure that people get that right away.
Oh, just go to businesslyceum.com. When you get there, hit on the monthly newsletter link, and it'll take you right to all the information.
Okay, great. One of the things that you had a topic of conversation, I thought it was very, very interesting, was regarding, you know, hype in advertising and hype in marketing, and, you know, should you really tell people that they don't have to do any work whatsoever? What are your thoughts on that? I mean, you know, a lot of the business opportunity people, and you don't do that, and I respect that. And but almost all of the business opportunity ads and things that you read, they're talking about you don't have to do any work, you can sit at home, not do anything at all, and the money's just going to start pouring in.
Right, right. It's pitiful. But it's been that way for 30 years that I know of. And they come and go. The thing is, hype material I can justify, because as I say, anything can inspire you to become something. But hype advertising I simply just cannot tolerate. Because when you advertise to people, well, I've always said that you advertise for the kind of customers you want. Mm-hmm. If that's the kind of customers you want, fine and dandy. But I don't like those kind of customers.
Yeah, right. That makes
sense. I don't like people who want something for nothing, who are always looking for a free lunch. Matter of fact, people say, well, your list is a lot smaller than most of them, but you pull better results. That's because I get those people off my list just as quick as I possibly can.
And that, you know, and you've got very interesting thoughts on using the word free in your advertising, and I've totally adopted that. Do you mind explaining what that is?
About using free.
Using the word free, like if you're using, let's say, a Google AdWords or something like that, having it free up front. You usually don't talk about it, say that it's free up front. As I understand it, they've got to go and read all of the material to find out that they may get a free report or something like that.
That's right. If someone goes to businesslyceum.com, they won't find free. It used to read, when I first started out, someone had said that free is the big word to use on the Internet. So I had free newsletter, free reports, and I can't remember what the other one was, free something. But I dropped the free, and the quantity of people dropped off. But guess what? The quality improved. And they don't find out that it's free till they actually go there. That way, they're not. You know, I don't get the people that hit on everything that says free.
Yeah, so you've got a great term for them. I believe you call them freeloaders and moochers. Is that correct?
Yeah, and there are so many of them out there.
Now, what about if you're doing offline advertising? Do you still subscribe to that?
Oh yes.
So it's the same thing. There's no difference then.
You'll find a lot of free stuff in my material, but you won't find out it's free until you get into it.
Right, exactly right. So what you're saying then is you want to advertise the same kind of customers that you want to attract.
Oh yes.
In other words, okay, that's outstanding.
Well, because you always go for the level of customers that you want. People talk about the level of opportunities and this and that. But believe me, the level of customers is far more important to your business than the level of your business. Whereas just because you're the biggest, fattest in town, matter of fact, let me just tell you a little story. I won't name any names, but one well-known internet marketer put out a mailing for one of my products. Mailing list, 70,000. Response, one order. And I couldn't believe it. And I asked him, did you send out the mailing? Oh, yes, we sent it out to all 70,000 of our customers. And, you know, when I've often said you can make more money with 1,000 good customers than you can with 100,000 looky-loos. Well, that's what I've always done is culture my customers.
Well, that's exactly right, and that's exactly what I have. You know, for my magicians list, that's tiny. I mean, as you can probably imagine, that's a tiny, tiny market, but we pull great numbers out of there, as much as $4 or $5 per email sent, just because the list is so good and you cultivate the list. You're exactly right.
And if you have to trick somebody into buying your product, if you have to use some kind of gimmick trick to get them to buy, they're not going to be good customers because they're looking for, you know, they buy the gimmick. They don't buy the product.
You know, that's the other thing that I notice in a lot of your copywriting, because there's just so much we could talk about. Your copywriting is brilliant in that it's not that hypey. And I've also noticed that masters like you and some of the other real masters, they don't have to have, not that there's anything wrong with having a 16 or 20 page sales letter, but a lot of your stuff isn't that long, but you get to the point.
Right.
You know, because everyone's teaching, you know, long copy sells. In fact, I just had a question, well, how long should my copy be? What would your answer be to that?
long enough to get the point across without boring the customer, and at the same time short enough so that, you know, it can be read very rapidly. I don't like long copy in a lot of respects, although I have used long copy and still do on some of my products. But the thing is, you start, well, when I write a sales piece, I may write 30 pages. Then I go through and I figure out, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
And I go through, they don't care about this, cross it out. By the time I'm finished with the first edit, I'm down to maybe 10 pages. And then I keep editing down till I'm satisfied that it says everything that needs to be said in the message. Then I put it out and test it. If it works, I'll continue it, but I'll start condensing it on down. Matter of fact, some of the longest pieces that I wrote originally for sales copy has gone down to as little as 2 pages in order to sell the product. Matter of fact, I made a Dean Duval challenged me, 25 years ago. He said, nobody can sell anything with just a one-page sales letter. So I wrote a one-page sales letter for my, the 17 free reports that are out on my website. Mm-hmm. Pick up the PDF of the free report out there. Those 17 reports were written initially as a one-a-month little letter that went out to my subscribers. It was $10 a year back then. Postage was 8 cents to make a mailing. And Dean challenged me that nobody can write a one-page sales letter that pulls anything. I had that letter printed and pulled 23%. $10, that's $230 for every 1,000 I put out. And you figure back then it cost me about 12 cents a piece in the mail.
Wow.
So...
Yeah, so it's not really long copy or short copy, it's good copy.
That's it.
And because a lot of your things that I, you know, a lot of the flyers that you have, and we're going to get into that, there's a couple books that are must-haves in my mind of yours that people have to get. I wanted to get it right after this call. The first is your affiliate, your book on affiliate programs is just mind-blowing, phenomenal, phenomenal book.
Oh, thank you.
The best I've read, and I've read a lot.
Well, the reason, it's like I've told people ask me for the last 3 or 4 years, well, why don't you write a book on affiliate marketing? I said, when I can do it and make it profitable, then I'll write about what I've done.
Oh, geez, that's a change, isn't it?
Yeah, because I could have written a book 4 years ago on affiliate marketing, but until I could actually do it, and actually it was, mid-year of 2002, I think, that I actually discovered the methodology, how to do it. And I use the same methodology today that I started back then. Had someone just write me and told me, well, most of this is old stuff. It's old stuff, but it's the way I apply it that makes it different.
Well, I don't think it's old stuff at all. I think I don't think it's old. If you just skim it, it's old stuff. But if you read it, I've read the thing 3 times.
Right.
And the way you structure your emails... and you lay it out so beautifully there. And here's the thing: even if you don't want to be an affiliate marketer, you could still use those same strategies that you have in that affiliate book to sell your own product.
Right. Well, the big secret is don't try to sell anybody anything by email.
Mm-hmm.
Your sales page is supposed to do the selling. That's what it's for. Your email has one purpose and one purpose only. The same as a two-step classified ad. You want to put it out to your readers and inspire them to go read the sales page. I had one guy put out a mailing for one guy's product. The product is damn good, but the man's sales piece is pitiful. I told him that the sales piece was bad. I said, you really need to tell the people more in there and sell them the product. Oh, no, it's working fine. So I put out a mailing to my people. I made money on it. But the percentages were poor, mm-hmm. Very poor, because although I drove I think I drove about 900 people to his site, but out of that, I think only 6 bought.
Mm.
So I made a few bucks on it. But the thing is, no matter how good my classified ad is, if my follow-up isn't good, it won't work. And it's the same way if you have affiliates selling your product, make sure that the sales piece that they send people to sells the product.
Right. So you're talking about, and really what you're talking about, the bottom line is integrity. You know, not putting out something before you've actually done it yourself, making sure that you're what if you have affiliates promoting something that you, that your sales page sells. And that really comes down to integrity. And a lot of guys, you know, especially online, you know, offline as well, too, but there's a lot of guys that are just out there to make a quick buck.
They'll sell anything if the commission is high enough.
Well, that's another interesting thing that you have, in, is that you don't have that, you don't subscribe to that belief. You will promote good products even if you're only getting a $10 or $5 commission on it.
Well, one of my biggest commission checks, affiliate commission checks, over the past year has been from a product that sells for $9.95.
Wow.
$4 on every sale. But it's been consistently one of my biggest commission checks.
Wow, exactly.
And it's simply because the product is good, the sales piece is good. When people buy it, they get what they paid for, and he has a couple backside products that I also earn commissions on, but it starts with that little $9.95 order.
You know, and most people, that's the complete opposite of what is being taught. I just read an affiliate course where they say, well, make sure you're only promoting high-priced products so you can get the biggest commission possible.
Oh, yeah, I never promote anything unless you get at least 50%. And, hey, I've got the one out there, I don't even market it much anymore. I've just got links on various pages and in my various reports and everything. And that darn thing produces, and I get a 20% commission is all I get. It's a $49.95, I believe. I get 20%. But it just keeps coming in. It's a nice, steady little paycheck every month.
But in what you're saying is, so be concerned about offering quality products to your customers, and then the commissions will take care of themselves.
And if you don't read it and review it yourself, don't even think about marketing it.
Okay.
Because over the last, well, here recently I put out a deal. Everyone's asking about this no money down type of real estate deals.
Right.
I guess I read 50 of those things because I asked them, you know, before, you know, they each of them had a affiliate program. And, you know, shoot me a review copy and let me review it. Out of those 50, I ended up with two that were really worth anything, that had good substance to it. And I read all 50 of them.
Well, that's great. I mean, and again, so you're talking, because of this, your customers are loyal to you because they know when you recommend something, you're not just doing it to make a buck.
That's it.
That's beautiful. I want to quickly ask you, we've been having a discussion on my Inner Circle site, and I actually brought it up, is, you know, there's a trend where people are selling, you know, a 1995 book or a 2595 book, and it's really nothing more than a bound sales letter.
Yep.
And when I bought your mail order book, which is the other book, which is a must-have, whether or not you want to get into mail order or not, it's about marketing, there's testing in there, it's unbelievable. So that's another must-have, is your mail order book. When I bought it, because it's very inexpensive, I was really thinking, hey, you know, this is going to be a lead generation book, but it's not. In fact, everything I bought from you is real content. So when someone buys a product from you, they're getting real content. Now, there may be some, you know, some information in the back about buying other things, which is fine. What are your thoughts about that, though? I mean, to me, that seems like it's kind of, if you're charging somebody money, shouldn't you be delivering the content or not? Or does it really?
Oh, yes, yes. As a matter of fact, those real estate books that I read,
mm-hmm.
one of them is a 120-page sales piece.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is. It's selling his real estate deal, which sells, I think, for $1,400, but it's 120 pages of sales material. It tells you, you know, here's a little gimmick you can use, and then you'll find it all in my big course. And then the next item is the same way. It tells you, you'll find it all in my big course. Whenever I write a product about something, I write about that. Any subsequent sales are dependent upon the value they get from the product that they buy. I always say I don't make sales, I make customers.
Mm.
Matter of fact, on my email list, every person that orders something, every time they order something, it gets listed in the remarks section. And if you go through my email list, you'll go down through that list, you'll see they buy, it's like eating peanuts, you can't eat just one. you buy one of my products, you're going to buy another one.
Right, because well, because you deliver on what you promise. And, you know, a lot of these little books, which are really nothing but bound sales letters, like you said, I mean, in my opinion, first of all, it's not ethical to do that and to charge somebody money for it. And then the second thing is, I mean, don't you ruin your customer value by doing that? I mean, sure, you may convert, but then they're going to have in the back of their mind anything that you sell is going to be that.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, you can get them once.
Right.
And that's what mostly, unfortunately, too many of your marketing people want to get it once. You know, I want to get a sale. And I don't want to get necessarily a sale. I want to get a customer, someone who reads my material. The only people who don't order other things are ones who buy, like my free and clear report. You know, get 1,000 to 5,000 free and clear within 30 days. That thing has been on the market for darn near 20 years. I wrote it originally as an idea for a young man that came to see me and needed a way to raise some quick cash.
Mm-hmm.
I made it up as a report after I told him the idea and set it up for him. And a guy over in Arkansas today is making over $30,000 a month off of that little report. He bought it 17 years ago. He calls me every once in a while. He won't let me tell anybody where he is. He's making oodles of gods. He said, I don't work anymore. He said, I got kids that do most of the work, college kids and high school kids.
That's unbelievable.
And so, but that led, it's a $10 report. But a lot of people who buy that think that, you know, I'm going to tell them a gimmick that they can just go out and get free money. No, you don't get free money. It tells you in the sales piece, you trade sweat for money. It's something you physically got to go out and do.
But if you do it, it works.
Oh, yes.
So there you go. Let me ask you this. You know, I don't know your whole business. I haven't figured it out yet completely. But I don't
Neither
see that.
I.
Huh?
Neither have I.
I don't see that you have huge back-end products.
No.
Like, you know, 10,000. And that's what, you know, again, what every marketer teaches these days is, okay, you sell your $50 book or whatever, but then you must have a huge, huge, gigantic back end. Do you think that is necessary?
Well,
I know you need a back end. That's not what, I should clarify what I'm talking about to the listeners. You need back end products, but do you need very high price back end products?
No. The idea is if you've got good customers and they buy, I've got people out there that have bought everything I've written for 30 years. And they, when are you going to republish this? And it's so outdated that I couldn't possibly republish it. No, you build customers. The whole thing is to satisfy your customer. But, talking about high price, do you know that I was the first mail order marketer to sell a $100 product by mail?
Oh, really? I did not know that.
That was back in 1971 or 72.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
The highest price mail order product back then was around 1995.
You're kidding me. I did not realize that.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
And I sold it, and I heard from all of them when I put out the first mailing. Never fly. You cannot get people to send you $100 through the mail. It just won't happen. But my desk was stacked up with $100 checks, money orders.
Wow.
And in, what was it, 73 or 74, I was one of the first mail order marketers to have credit cards on my order slips.
Really?
Oh, yes.
So that must have really boosted sales tremendously.
Oh, yeah. Well, they finally, you know, Visa, well, back then it was Bank America and MasterCharge, authorized the use by mail order companies if they had a signature and all of that, you know. So we had to have, on the order coupon, they had to have a signature place and the numbers and everything else. And then every card had to be called in for a physical, verbal authorization code.
Wow.
Oh, it was a mess. You have somebody sitting there on the phone all day long talking with Bank America and MasterCard, and they weren't combined.
Oh, man.
So I'd have to call Bank America on every Bank America card. I'd have to call MasterCharge on every MasterCard.
Oh, what a nightmare. So what you're saying is that people today should have no excuse for not making money then, right?
Oh, yes.
With the way it is.
Oh, well, people have always had an excuse. I've got one guy that's been with me for 20 years. He's never made a dime yet. But he'll order products, and then I'll ask him, well, did you do it? Well, no, I didn't think that I could do that. Let me buy this one.
Well, you know what? Dan Kennedy has got a neat thing about that. He says, you know, he talks about that's how that person gets their satisfaction.
Oh, yeah.
From buying the product, whether or not they use it. And that's not your responsibility, whether or not they use it. Your responsibility is if they use it, that it works.
Oh, yeah. Well, Joe Kosman, may he rest in peace. Last time I visited with him, about a year before his death, Joe was telling about his Millionaires Club.
Mm-hmm.
He set up our Future Millionaires Club, something like that. He had clubs all over the United States, and people could join those clubs. And he said every time that he'd go to some city, he'd have them print out all of the names and addresses of the members in that city. Then him and Pearl, his wife, would go around, just drive around to the addresses and knock on the door and say, I'm Joe Kosman, you're a member of my Future Millionaires. And he said every one of them had business cards. Like 1 out of 100 would actually be doing business. Had those Future Millionaire Club membership cards with their name imprinted, and they would, you know, had them so they could give everybody a copy of their card.
Oh, man.
He called them card-carrying do-nothings. But he said it was really terrible because, you know, all the opportunities and everything that Joe had in those clubs, I mean, anybody could have made a fortune from them.
Right. Exactly. What are your thoughts, and I know this is a controversial subject, and it really got my mind when I read this, and I think it was your direct mail book, about guarantees, about offering guarantees.
Well, for years and years, I offered probably one of the strongest money-back guarantees in the world, you know, and heck, anybody that sent stuff back, they got their refunds and all of that. Then I got to thinking about it here about 10, 12 years ago. I said, I wonder about those refunds. So I had lists compiled of everybody who'd requested a refund, what they had requested a refund on. 80% of them had bought 2 or 3 or 4 of my products and refunded every one of them.
Mm.
And I looked down through the list, the same names over and over and over again. And, of course, my refund never ran more than, maybe 1% or 2% at the very most. And so I simply eliminated the money-back guarantee. Oh, yeah, response dropped down just by the same percentage as it would have refunds.
You're kidding me. So what you're saying is that the people decide to refund when they bought the product.
Oh, hell, they decide before they buy it. They buy everything. I had ClickBank, unfortunately. You can't stop refunds.
Right.
I had a gal yesterday bought my snooper report. This morning, I had a refund notice from ClickBank that she had refunded it.
Yeah. Well, I've had people who buy the thing and then refund it like immediately. They don't even hide the fact that they're screwing me.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they just refund it right away.
Of course, so, I have a little note I send to people like that. You have my heartfelt pity. You know. By taking an unauthorized refund, you've proven yourself to be unworthy of success in life or business.
Good. I mean, that's a great line, and that is absolutely true. And again, this goes back to the integrity issue. If your copy, if you tell the person what they're going to get in the copy, and you're honest about it, and you deliver that, there is absolutely no reason that there should be a refund.
Yeah, well, as a matter of fact, here about 4 weeks ago, I bought a $379.95 deal. They don't have an affiliate program, and I asked for a review copy, and they don't send review copies. So I spent $379.95, and I read it. Studied every bit of it. It is the most worthless piece of damn garbage I have ever read in my life. It's filled with all of the consumer-oriented mindset that business is evil, therefore you've got to be evil in order to make money. Went through all that, but I'm not going to send it back for a refund. It's got a 60-day refund deal on it, but I'm not sending it. But I don't send stuff back for refunds because I'll gain something out of that trash somewhere.
Maybe for a newsletter or something.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to review, so you don't have the guarantee copy then in your copy.
Nope.
And all you noticed was a drop in sales. But that was commensurate with the amount of refunds that you were getting anyway.
Yeah, now and the same thing with testimonials. I don't use a lot of testimonials.
Again, see, this is what's brilliant, guys, who are listening to this call. This is somebody who's actually tested this and has been doing this for years. The wisdom that you're getting here is incredible. And this goes completely against what everyone else teaches.
Well, now, I use the testimonials. If you'll go out to my Worldwide Business Exchange page, you'll find a list of testimonials, mm-hmm. but they're real testimonials. If you'll read the testimonials that these people put out, I just read your material, and I know I'm going to make $1 million. Ain't done it, ain't going to do it.
Right.
If you'll read, 99% of the testimonials out there are the emperor has no clothes. You know, I love your stuff. I've got testimonials that, you know, oh, Jim, you're the greatest writer in the world. I love everything you've written and all that. What does that prove? When I put out, well, like Frank Kern sent me a testimonial on my real estate options report.
Yeah, Frank's a friend of mine, yeah.
Yeah, he made $30,000 on his 30th birthday using that method. Well, I'll tell people, he made $30,000, you know. Now, that's a testimonial that you can use. And another guy that, another gal ordered my free and clear, that little $10 report,
mm-hmm.
made $400 the first couple weeks, sent me an email, and said I could use it as a testimonial that she was teaching her son to do it so he'd always have something to fall back on. You know,
no, that's great.
When you can quote numbers from real people, fine and dandy, but if you have to use the emperor has no clothes type of testimonials, forget it.
And don't you talk about, in fact, I know you do, in one of your books, though, I mean, sometimes you get testimonies which are just so incredible that you don't use them?
Oh, yes.
Because no one's going to believe them, even though they are true?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's just fascinating. When did you make your transition from direct mail to going online?
I haven't.
Oh, you haven't?
See, I can take, you take some of these hotshot gurus out there with their fantastic sales page.
Mm-hmm.
You can take that sales page, turn it into a flyer or into a sales piece, and put it in the mail and probably make more money than you make on the Internet. Because of the Internet, all of the get-rich-quick opportunity type of things have gone to the Internet. So you'll find very, very few of them in the mail. That means there's less junk mail coming into the people. When they get a mailer, they'll read it and respond to it because they don't get things through the mail anymore. They get them by email.
Mm.
But you take any, I could, as a matter of fact, I've often said that maybe I'd put out sometime that for a price I would rewrite their sales pieces from the Internet and turn it into a mail order piece. But
yeah, but you know what? They're too lazy, a lot of them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The thing is, if you're going to do it, you've got to get into mail order. You've actually got to get the lists and all of that in order to mail, to market the pieces.
Let me ask you this. Regarding that, what are your thoughts about using, and I do this quite a bit, but I want your thoughts on it, using offline advertising to drive people online?
Oh, I still do it.
And do you make that the only option or a option?
An option, just one of the options.
Okay, and I think that's... Okay,
in my mail order book, I've got the warning, mm-hmm. over 90% of the information on mail order marketing is BS.
Yes, exactly.
All right, well, I put that card out. That card goes out, and they can request information on the report itself. It's a two-stepper, all right? It says the reply coupon is okay. I'm ready to learn the cold-blooded truth about mail order. Well, that worked fine. It always has since, 93, 94 when I wrote the course. And Dan Kennedy said I gave away too much stuff in there, but that's...
Well, you did for the price, I mean...
But in any case, I made a mailing with it and put at the bottom of it, also available online, you know, with the link. And every time I put that card out, the hits on that mail order sales page jumped through the roof. and the orders come in. And so, you know, the people can request the hard copy information, or they can go online and get the information. And I've seen something absolutely stupid here lately. It's the stupidest thing I've seen in my life. I want you to pick up a copy of any of the publications. I don't care whether it's USA Today or Money Making Opportunities. They have a classified ad, and all they've got is a link. Have a name, an address, or a telephone number, or anything. I could take any one of those ads if it's pulling anything at all and make a fortune with it, because add a name and address where they could actually mail a coupon in or whatever. But they're missing 70% of their customers simply because all they've got is an internet link in their classified ad.
Well, that is priceless information that you just gave there.
Well, I haven't even written about that, but it's been something I've noticed here, you know, because I pick up the Opportunity rags all the time, and USA Today and all of them, and look through. The same thing in the Wall Street Journal. Take a look through the Wall Street Journal classifieds.
So you're saying that to use both. Now let's follow up on that. Would you say to use an address still, or would you use a recorded message line?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
No, I've used recorded message lines and live lines. I'd prefer live lines.
You prefer live lines?
Oh, yes. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I prefer it to ring right here on my desk. Because that way, and I get more input from the people calling for information than you'd ever imagine. I learn more from my customers than they ever learn from me. This stuff about, you know, I'm the teacher. Yeah, well, believe me, my customers are the teachers.
Well, all right. So, this is just brilliant information. So if you're using offline advertising, you would say definitely put the URL in there,
right,
but also include either a phone number or an address. And you say it doesn't matter between the phone number or the address?
No, I always use the address.
You always use the address. Okay.
Right. A telephone number is optional.
Okay.
But, of course, I have our telephone number and fax number on every piece that goes out. It's on every page on my website. And, of course, now I only work from 9 to 2, Monday through Friday, so I put on there what my office hours are.
Okay, great. So if the phone number is optional, but the address is not. You would say definitely put the address on there. Because I think that the prevailing thought from the new gurus and from, you know, even guys like me would be that people aren't going to write in anymore for stuff.
Oh, Lord.
That's wrong.
Hey, if they only knew.
Okay, well, now we do. This is great.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, a gal called me yesterday from somewhere in California, and she said, you know, I've read your material years ago, and she said, I was at the library, and they've got an internet service there, and I asked them if there was anything out there about Jim Straw, and she said the librarian came back and told me there's all kind of Jim Straw stuff out there. Because I think not all my affiliates, but the ones that are active, the few that are active, you know, have my name in their stuff, so it's picked up on the search engines.
Exactly.
Now, you run my name, I think you'll get something like 6 million hits. But in any case, she said, but they charge me 10 cents a page for printing the information out.
Oh,
can you send me the flyers? So I took her name and address and mailed her all of the flyers. She said, I got your phone number off the website. They let me see it. But the library charges 10 cents a page for printing out the pages off of the internet.
I see. So you're doing both then? You're not just strictly online then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm more and more online than I am offline, but I'm still active on both sides.
Okay. You email your list a lot.
Oh, yes.
Can you tell us about that? Because, again, the prevailing wisdom, if you read all, other than my very good friend Matt Fury, you know of Matt, right?
Oh, yeah, I know Matt.
Yeah, who's a brilliant online marketer. You and he have the same philosophy as how to email your customers, and I've done the same thing and doubled my business.
Yeah.
So can you talk about that? How often should you email people?
Well, it depends a lot on what you're emailing them, because I don't put out nonsense to them. In other words, they know when I send out something, I've read it, reviewed it, and approve of it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, if I put out mailings almost every day. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, the mailing for today is my business license CME letter for March. It goes out today, so that'll be my mailing. But the thing is that it's just like in mail order. I say mail every day. All right, well, why don't you email every day? I'll tell you why. Because the people who are sending out those emails are getting requests to remove because they're, you know, you're sending me spam and all of that. The thing is, they have not built a rapport with their customers. I put out a mailing to my customers, my email customers. I may get one or two removes, and I'm glad to get them off my list because those aren't the kind of people that I want on the list anyway. And so the whole thing is that it's just like mail order. You mail every day, you email every day. If you've got good customers, well, I get emails all the time. I'm so happy to receive your emails because you've got such good stuff that I've been able to find from you. See? And, of course, if you put out an email every day and you're hawking $395 courses that are worth 35 cents, and they buy one of them, everything you send is spam. So.
Exactly. I got you. I got you. What are your thoughts about e-books versus real books?
I really don't have much of a thought on that because, see, all of my books were hard copy. They still are hard copy. I use PageMaker, and one of the facilities of PageMaker, and I didn't know it, was that it'll create a PDF file from any PageMaker file. And so I simply took my hard copy books and created a PDF file out of them.
All right. Do more people, because I know you offer the option on a lot of your books of getting both.
It's about 30% hard copy, 70% ebook.
Really?
Right.
Oh, I'm in the minority then. I would rather have the hard copy.
Oh, yes, yes. The customers who want hard copies, and me, I'm a hard copy fanatic. When I order an e-book, the first thing I do is put it on the laser printer and print a copy out and bind it. So
yeah, that's what I do, too. Exactly right.
Because I can't, you know, it's like I told someone, I'm one of these guys that likes to highlight things. And I highlight it on the page, and the next thing I know, I can't find that page again.
Exactly.
Highlight vanished.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. If you were just getting started today, and let's say you wanted to create another stream of income, what business would you get into, and what resources of yours would you recommend for people?
Oh, goodness. Who's the most beautiful woman in the world, Dave?
Oh, my wife, of course.
Well, yeah, but it depends upon who's looking, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And that's the hardest question. I get asked that question all the time, and my response is always, who's the most beautiful woman in the world? I have a very high risk threshold.
Okay.
They say entrepreneurs, what makes an entrepreneur is risk, but what makes an entrepreneur is calculated risk. You know.
Okay.
I know some things, and I input them, and if the risk looks too great, even I won't touch it. But the thing is, it all depends upon your risk threshold, what you like to do, what you don't like to do. For every advantage you want, there's a disadvantage you're going to have to accept. That's like I tell people, if you want the advantage of getting up late in the morning, you're going to have to find a place to work that lets you work late in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
Because for every advantage that you want, there is a disadvantage. You have to weigh those advantages and disadvantages and then determine what's best for you, your personality, your risk threshold, all of that. There is no, if there were only one good opportunity, then there wouldn't be any others.
Good point. Good point. Kennedy, that's the point that Kennedy makes about a weight loss program. If there was one program that worked for everybody, there'd only be one.
Right, and it's the weight loss program that you finally choose.
Mm.
Whatever inspired you in that weight loss program is the one that works for you.
Mm.
I mean, you know, there are all of these skinny pills and all of that. If a person takes the skinny pill and they've made up their mind that they're going to lose weight, they're going to lose weight. But if they're not sure, but, well, this skinny pill's going to do it for me, but they're not sure it will, then they take the pill and they continue eating 400 calories a minute, and then they wonder why they haven't lost weight.
Right, exactly.
So it depends upon, it's like I say, whatever inspires you to do what you're going to do will be the one that you claim is the best one in the world.
That's a great answer. That's a great answer. But even with that, I'm going to still recommend that the people definitely get your mail order book, because all these guys need marketing, and your affiliate, because both of those, whether you want to do mail order or affiliate marketing or not, those are direct marketing books, teach you how to direct market. Don't you agree?
Oh, yes. Both of them are foundational. They create the foundation of good logic in those areas. And without logic, believe me, all of the hype in the world won't do anything for you.
Okay, I'm going to definitely have the link in my newsletter for those and on my website. And I just we're coming to the end here. I know your time is valuable. I just want to ask you there's four questions, actually two questions that I ask everyone at the end of these interviews. And the first is, what are the three most important books that you've read in your life that have impacted you the most? They don't have to be business books. Whatever the three most important books are. I ask easy questions.
Yeah, well, the one I enjoyed most was Claude Bristol's Magic of Believing. Matter of fact, I still read that one again and again. I get something new every time I read it. And, of course, I've studied all of the books of religion, and I like all of them. From the Bible to the Koran, it doesn't make any difference. I've read all of them, and each of them teach all of the lessons. Very few people get the lessons, but they're there. Like I say, I've got copies of the Bible, the Koran, the Book of Mormon, you name it, I've got all of them. And all of them teach the values. And so that would be, I guess, second would be religious books, the books, not religious books, but, you know, the Bibles of each of the different types of religions, including the Black Magic books on voodoo. I've even read them. They have inspiration in them. And then, of course, I've read, back in high school, the English teacher used to keep a list of the books we'd read, checked out of the library and read. I read something like around 700 books in four years in high school.
Oh, my gosh.
That came from the library. I didn't get this. Even now, I read as high as 50 to 150 books a year.
Wow.
Usually right at 100 anyway. But the thing is that a third would be just anything that interests you. Read it. Because Dad used to say, damn, never seen a kid like that in my life, sitting in the corner with his hair in his eyes reading the book.
That's
the story of my life. I've got a library of about 7,000 books. So.
You're 7,000. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
I've got books that nobody's ever seen. Manuscript. I've got Joel Kosman's last manuscript that he wrote.
Wow.
That never published and probably never will be, but it's the life and times of an entrepreneur.
Wow. That must be great reading. The final question I have for you is, do you have any success rituals? How do you stay on track to reach your goals, I guess? Is there something that you do daily? Do you say affirmations? What do you do to keep yourself motivated? And
I use sticky notes.
Sticky notes?
You know, the little post-it notes?
Mm-hmm.
You'll find them all over my desk. As a matter of fact, there's one here. It says, 11 a.m. Tuesday, Dave D. interview.
Hey, there you go.
Now, when we get off the phone, I'll throw that one away. These people keep their day timers and all of that. Well, I used to just keep little pieces of paper until post-it notes came out. Now I've got post-it notes sticking everywhere. As a matter of fact, on the front of my computer it says E-letter March, which means the E-letter has to go out today. And I make notes to myself if I hear something. Matter of fact, I pull things that I stick them up on the wall. There's one by Ed Fergal. My luck is so bad that if I bought a cemetery, people would stop dying. And there's a quote over here from Oprah Winfrey. It says, failure is God's way of saying, excuse me, you're moving in the wrong
direction. That's great. Wow, that's brilliant. That's brilliant.
Yeah, and then there's Edmund Hillary's quote, it's not the mountain we conquer, but ourselves.
Ah.
And all hard work brings a profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty, Proverbs 14:23.
Mm.
These are little things that are sticking on. Benjamin Disraeli said the secret of success is the constancy of purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I've got these sticking on my walls.
That's great.
Little pieces of paper where I've written these things down. If I happen to hear something or read something, I'll copy it and stick it on the wall for a while.
Well, that's brilliant. Well, you know, I really want to thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
The wisdom that you've imparted here is priceless, quite frankly. I've learned so much. I've taken notes like crazy here myself.
Well, just remember, there are no secrets in this old world, just things you don't happen to know right now. But I've added one little piece to that. That's what my daddy used to say. There are no secrets, just things you don't happen to know right now. But I added another little bit to it. It still remains a secret if you don't do it.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Well, what my daddy said is anyone who you greatly respect, you call Mr., and so I'm going to continue to call you Mr. Straw, even though you told me to call you Jim.
Well, Mr. Straw will always be my daddy.
Well, thank you so much for your time and for your knowledge, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. And could you give out your website address one more time
it's
for us?
It's just BusinessLyceum, LYCEUM.com.
All right, and again, I'll have that printed in the newsletter so people can get access to all of your materials.
Very good.
And they should. Well, thank you so much, sir.
Well, thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.